Today is March 26, 2010. I'm Sherry Bowers, the local history coordinator here at the Milan Berlin Township Public Library. I'm here with Tom and Marlene Eastman, former owners of Eastman's Grocery Store. And this oral history interview is in reference to the pictures that Larry Lambert took 20 years ago of Mrs. Eastman in the grocery store. So we're going to talk here with the Eastmans about the grocery store and the things that had happened in Milan, some of the interesting stories that they've shared with me. So I'd like you to start and tell us when you started the grocery store and you bought it from someone here in Milan, if you can give us a little history about that.
We bought the store from Bill Kramer and we took it over in January 1st of 1977. We actually opened up January 2nd of 1977. And Bill was getting up in his ears and he was ready to get out, and then he changed his mind. We talked to him for a year before we bought it. And 2 months before we were supposed to take it over, he called me up and wanted to know if I wanted to back out of the deal. So he didn't know if he wanted to sell or not. But then we ended up buying it from him and took it over the first of 77. And the first year we started having heavy snows, which was really helpful because it helped our business because people stayed in town to shop. They couldn't get out of town. And the second year we were in business, which was 78, we had the real bad blizzard, and we couldn't get to our store for 2.5 days, but the local police department and some of the local people helped us and opened. Gladys Drake worked for us at the time, and she had a key, so she came up and opened the store up, and her son and daughter came with her, and Mayor Bickley's wife, Marilyn, she come up and helped in the meat department, and one of the school teachers by the name of Don Day come in and worked. And since then he's passed away, but I think there was a couple other people that helped the store too. I don't remember who they were, and I know there was a lot of people stranded on the turnpike. It was the first day of the blizzard we were closed, but Gladys opened it up so the police department could get some food in after the people that were stranded on the turnpike.
But I also think that they take snowmobiles out and they got Judy Smith from her house.
Actually, the city snowplow.
They opened up the road so they could go get her to bring her into work.
One of our cashiers.
Yeah.
So, she lived just outside of town.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting. I think for a lot of people, we actually, before this interview, talked about the fact that people don't remember the impact of the blizzard of 78. And I remember it. I was in middle school at the time, but I remember the blizzard of 78 when it started. And I believe they said that the winds, it wasn't so much as snow, but the winds were like hurricane force winds. And I don't think people who remember it, of course, you read about it, but it really did shut things down. And, you know, you were talking about people locally here coming into to keep the store open. You shared with me an interesting story about going back to Don Day and someone else. It involved Lawson's truck. Tell us about that. That was an interesting story.
It was a Lawson's dairy truck full loaded with milk. Was stranded on a turnpike not too far from, which is exit 7 on 250. And they came in and said, you know, we got all this milk and we can't move our truck and it's going to spoil. Would you like to get rid of it for us? So they actually gave it to us. And Don Day and a couple other people, Don had a four-wheel drive, and we had a four-wheel drive, and they'd go out, and we'd run low on milk, they'd go out to the turnpike and with the four-wheel drives and get the milk and bring it into the store, and we were selling it for, a fourth of what regular milk price was, and we were the only store around that even had milk, and we heard that some of the other stores had even jacked their prices up on merchandise because they were running low, and we were practically giving it away to get rid of it because we had a whole semi-load to get rid of. And I think we were selling 4 half-gallons for a dollar or something like that, just a ridiculous price just to get rid of it. People were coming from all over to get milk.
I was wondering about that. People were trying to get in just to get the milk for that price.
Mm-hmm. And, we had,
I think they had cottage cheese and stuff too.
There was some cottage cheese and some other stuff on it too, yeah. But it was mainly milk. And of course, bread was hard to get too because the bread deliveries couldn't get through. But Vic Mooney at the time was picking up bread from, I don't don't remember what company it was anymore.
I mean, he worked for him.
Tasty, maybe. I think.
I believe it was Tasty.
Tasty. And he had a bunch of bread, and he had a four-wheel drive and a trailer that he pulled, and he was getting bread and getting it from us. And we also were buying donuts and that from Meek's Pastry in Norwalk, and they were baking extra homemade bread that we were picking up from them and selling it at the store.
How long did it take, I know, for the to actually get everything cleared off? Because, you know, when I'm listening to you tell me about, you know, like Meek's baking bread, and it seemed to me that it was apparent that it was going to take probably a good couple days to a week. Is that right, in terms of getting everything running and functioning again?
Well, I think even our beef and that, because we got it from Calbo's and that, we went over and got it ourselves. They didn't deliver.
They didn't
Tom would
trucks.
Take the four-wheel and go and get it so that we had product to sell, you know, like meat. So basically, because we were self-sufficient ourselves and could do that, it helped us because we had stuff to sell, you know, just like the bread and the milk and the meat. We went and got that stuff ourselves. I think we even went over to Ruth Packing and picked up some of our own pork because they weren't delivering. So because we were little enough, if you're really, really huge, I don't know if you could do what we did back then.
See, because you couldn't rely on the semis to get through,
right.
Because
mm-hmm.
It probably took a while to get everything cleaned up. And I remember slightly, and I don't know if it was a couple days afterwards, going with my father into Sandusky, and I can remember the snow piled up so high on the side of Cleveland Road. But again, I don't remember how many days after the storm that was. But that's a memory that I have of the storm and its impact.
We were stranded at our house. We lived just on the south side of Norwalk, and 61 was blocked. We were stranded at our house till Saturday morning Thursday till Saturday morning. And they had a big front end loader actually digging the road out so traffic could get through, because regular snowplows couldn't begin to get through the snowdrifts. They were so deep.
We tried to get in. In fact, we seen how bad it was getting. We got up early in the middle of the night and we had our four-wheel drive, and we packed. We had both of our sons and Tom and I and our dog, and we made it through a Hasbrock, and we turned on the ridge and we went into a ditch.
I couldn't see where I was driving.
No, we couldn't see.
We couldn't see.
And luckily in that, what was that?
It was a little Honda.
A little Honda.
Three guys in it.
It was a little Honda came. We could see these lights coming because it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and they were coming up the hill. It was like a miracle. And they stopped and picked all of us up and put them in this little thing, our dog and everything. And then they went off the road, too, after they turned. And we actually had our heads out the window guiding us down the road because we couldn't see. And this little bitty car and that, we went off the road, and the guys actually got out and picked the car up and put it on the road. It was funny. And it's true. The wind was so bad. It was actually, my eyelashes actually were froze like. And you could actually, it was blowing you right down the road. It was really, and they got to our house, and then those guys stayed with us until morning. And then it was really bad then, and we didn't want them to leave, but they did. But they at least got us back home, because I think that was the only car we ever seen. And that was really funny. That was a different experience. But we were trying to get to the store, but we just couldn't make it. We waited too long. So,
interestingly enough, though, it was great that you had the help from some of the local residents that you mentioned earlier to come in and keep the store running. And after the storm, you did say you were able to keep replenishing items because you were able to get out yourself and do that. But I imagine for a lot of other local grocery stores, maybe their shelves were probably pretty empty.
Stores in Norwalk, I know they were out of bread and milk and a lot of the essentials. Because the big stores just couldn't get any trucks in. The companies weren't running their trucks. They were keeping them off the road. So we were fortunate that we could go get some of the stuff ourselves and that the milk truck got stranded.
You know, interestingly, you wonder if why you always notice it seems like still when there's a storm, and even when that we know there's a snowstorm, you'll see the grocery store is packed. And, of course, a lot of these people probably don't remember the blizzard of 78 or have lived through that kind of storm, but it seems like it's always the same, that when there's a hint of bad weather coming in, the stores seem to get packed with people.
For several years after the blizzard, every time it snowed, we'd just get swamped with business. People come in almost buy us out because they were afraid they were going to get stranded again like they did in the blizzard.
We never really, you know, I think when you're small and that, you know, it's hard to close because you lose the business and it's, you know, it's hard, especially like when we first got started and when we were down at the store where Jim Pizza Box is now, that's where we originally, there were times we didn't go home and that, and we'd put 25-pound bags of dog food behind the meat counter, and that's where we'd sleep at night on those 25-pound bags of dog food, and that's so we'd be there for the next morning. We did that a couple of times.
We did that at our new building, too. We slept in our office.
Yeah, we slept there in the office.
In fact, one night we
didn't have an office in our old store.
Tell us about the old store. So you started out actually where Jim's Pizza Box is, right?
Right.
Now that was Kramer's?
That was
right.
Kramer's Red and White.
Okay.
And when he retired, we... Bought it from him, and Red and White was at the time was merging with Defiance Grocery Company out of Defiance, Ohio. So we went actually with Defiance Grocery Company, which we were a Best Mart, which their smaller stores were Best Mart, so the bigger stores were Foodlands. Mm-hmm. And then we were with them for a couple years. In fact, Marlene and I went on a vacation. And when we came home, our employees come up to us and they says, boy, something bad happened while you were gone. The warehouse that you're buying from closed up. You don't have any place to buy groceries. So I started calling around and I called Cardinal and talked to them because I knew a couple of people that worked there. And they said, well, you know, we'll sell groceries to you if... Gardner's Cardinal in Norwalk will allow us to, because of they have a stipulation if one store, they won't sell to another store within so many miles of a store that's been with them for several years. So they talked to Gardner. Bob Gardner says, no, I said, I don't care because you know, we were well within the radius that they weren't supposed to sell to another store. So Bob Gardner said, no, I said, I don't care if you sell to them. It don't matter to me. So then we started buying from Cardinal. We were with Cardinal until we closed up. It's 96.
Was that one of the problems for a lot of, or is that a problem for a lot of small businesses is trying to find someone to buy from? Because, you know, with Walmart and some of the bigger box chains are able to buy in the quantity. Is that what hurts small businesses in terms of trying to?
A lot of your independent warehouses like IGA and some of them, now they're going, if you don't buy a certain amount of groceries every week from them, they won't deliver to you. So it's getting hard for small stores to buy and buy competitive because the big warehouses won't sell to you. So you got to go to your smaller warehouses or smaller distributors, which don't have near as big a variety, and they also charge a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So it really puts a small business at a disadvantage because you just can't compete with the big stores.
Another thing that we had to look at is Cardinal had more to offer us by going with them, like for their fees for accounting. Like, you know, like I would do the daily and the weekly and balance that out, but then they finished everything. You just sent it on the truck and they finished everything out. And I think they only charge you like $45 a week or something like that, which was, and they did our taxes and all that. So
payroll,
they did all that, which was cheap. And another big thing that was a concern for me is we looked at a couple other ones and they didn't do, like if you had a price increase or something on a product, they didn't send price changes to you. You had to figure out what you wanted to put on that product. Well, that's a big thing. You can't just guess what you want to put on a product, you know, because you have to be competitive.
Right.
And so Cardinals had all that stuff to offer. So that was a big factor in a lot of it. You know, you have to look at all angles. It's not just, but yeah, it's quantity. I know right when we were closing, one of the big things too, and that they used to, when we first started out, you could, when the truck came in that you didn't have to have your check for the truck until, like we get on Wednesday and they didn't have to have it until the following week, so you can mail it as long as they got it. But just as we were closing and that, they were changing all that, where when the truck pulled up, the money had to be there. There, you know, usually you had time to sell some of that product, where that was all changing. So it was, you know, it's just the way the times are.
Yeah, in fact, you had to send it.
Sometimes it was a blank check. It used to be a blank check.
You had to send a blank check back with them.
And they filled in the amount. Yeah. We didn't like that.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't see where, you know, because you always hear the rules. You never send a blank check or leave a blank check around. So that would be.
We had to send a signed blank check back with the truck driver. Mm-hmm. And he filled in the amount when he got back to the warehouse. And then like Marlene said, the last few weeks or last few months, I guess, we were open. There was changing over that actually when the truck pulled up, they had the total of what that truck was. And we had to write them a check right then. Before or the truck wouldn't unload. And you were talking maybe $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 that you had to write right at that moment before you could even sell any of the merchandise.
They used to give you a leeway, and then the leeway was gone. So
they used to give you about a week.
Yeah, they gave you about a week. I think they had to have it by the following Wednesday or something like that, which would have been your next truck. But that was all changing, and what all their policies are now.
When did you close? What was the year you started in business in 77, right?
We closed in 96.
In 96.
So we were open just a few months under 20 years. Mm-hmm. We were there. And I think Kramer had been in Milan for almost 40. And Kurt, there was another small store, Mr. Fox.
Oh, the end.
Mr. Fox had a small store over on the corner. And in fact, the last year or so that he was open, nobody had really sell to him. Nobody had really sell to him. So I used to, he'd tell me what he needed, and I'd order his stuff along with mine, and just whatever I paid for it, I sold it to him for the same price. And otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to stay open as long as he did, because none of the meat companies or cheese companies or getting some of the groceries and that, none of them would sell to him. Because he just couldn't buy enough merchandise.
Some things that could help us too, you know, because his fill-ins can make a dollar total for us too, because we were still small. Even though you sell more, it's, you know, it still makes a difference. So it's like a small community helping a small community, you know, making it great like it is.
Right.
So
when you look at some of the pictures and products you sold, when you first started, I remember talking to you a little bit about how you said you added cards towards the end. What was your, when you first started, did the business change in terms of what you sold? Did you find that you had to start adding things to survive? And tell me about what the store looked like in the beginning in terms of merchandise.
When we bought Mr. Kramer out, our meat department was all service. Nothing was prepackaged or anything. And when we moved into the new store, we had both service and self-service meats. And we found that as time went on, more people were buying the self-service meats. So we actually eliminated all the fresh meat out of our case as far as service. I mean, we cut special orders. If somebody come in and wanted thick pork chops or thick steaks or something cut special beef roast or anything, we cut it for them right while they stood there and watched. But we put ground beef and pork chops and all that stuff out packaged because you could tell people were in more of a hurry, and they'd come home from work, on their way home from work, and they'd want to walk up to grab a package of hamburger or whatever and leave without having to stand at the meat case and wait for us to cut it or grind it for them or whatever.
That's interesting, because I think people don't realize that. I know as I've shopped through the years, I've noticed this change where you people don't tend to want to wait for that special cut of meat or even picking up seafood or whatever. You know, people just want to be able to go to those and get everything prepackaged. I still like to have things cut a certain way, if it's pork chops or whatever, but so that's one of the changes you noticed that happened through your ownership of the business. What about other things, did you see that how consumers changed in terms of what they wanted? How were the trends changing?
One of the big things in the pop industry is when they went from bottled pop to everything in cans and plastic bottles. When we first, well, for even when we were at in our new building, Pepsi and 7-Up, all your pops came in glass bottles. And so the people would bring the glass bottles back, load them up on a truck, and they'd take them back and wash them and refill them, which I think was a mistake when they went to all cans, because everybody's talking about saving energy and recycling and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't have to recycle tin cans or aluminum cans or plastic pop bottles or anything like that, because it was all in glass and it was recycled. They went back, washed them all out, refilled them, and brought them back out to the store, which I think it should have stayed that way, because it was, I think, a lot more efficient. I think it saved money because you didn't have all this aluminum cans to get rid of and recycle.
I think one thing I want to comment on is when we were still in the old store before we moved, it was a smaller store and we didn't handle as much product. But then when we moved to the new store, we expanded all that. And there really wasn't a lot that Cardinal handled that we did not handle. But then when it got to the point that, you know, we seen that we needed more business, and that Tom and I talked it over, well, maybe we should downsize some. But to me, that was the wrong thing to do, because that means we were eliminating things from our shelf. And there were still a lot of people that were doing their daily or their weekly shopping with us. So that's a hard decision to say, do we regress and go more like what we were when we started, which wouldn't have been as less, but we'd still be taking stuff off our shelves. Or do we stay the same we are and not, you know, we knew we wouldn't survive that way either. So I think that's a big change, because, and it's a big decision. And so we didn't go backwards. We just decided that was going to be it.
Is that because, do you think that is because consumers wanted to have the one stop where they did everything? Is that why possibly some of the bigger box stores have like a one stop for everything?
I don't go into Walmart very often, but when you go in, you see people with a grocery cart, and you know they have everything in their grocery cart, mm-hmm. not just meat and produce and groceries and, you know, toilet paper and dog food and that, but they have, you know, tablecloths and mm-hmm. a battery or, you know, whatever, and they're buying it all at one time, and I guess that's a trend.
But I think you spend more money that way, too. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people have a misconception of a small store. I think they think that they're overpriced and they're over, that they don't handle as much. I'm talking about just in food. I'm mm-hmm. not talking about because we could never handle clothing or something like that. But our prices basically were pretty competitive. Milk and bread and all that, we couldn't have been out of line because we have to stay with everybody else or you'd never sell any. So I think a lot of it's people's concept of what you have or... Mm-hmm.
Our meat was... We were cheaper than the big stores on our meat. And I think we handled a better quality because we bought all of our pork from Ruth Packing. And we bought all of our beef from Kelbo's over at Berlin Heights. And we cut everything fresh right at the store. Where all your big stores are going to box beef. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your big stores, that your ground beef in that, it isn't even ground fresh at the store. It's ground at a big packing house. And either it's packaged into regular retail packages, or it's ground into tubes about... 3 inches in diameter and about 2 foot long. And when the store gets it, they just cut the package open. And it's kind of a darkish brown when they first cut it open. But when the air hits it, it turns red. Mm-hmm. And then they just regrind it and put it out. Where we ground everything. We ground beef right fresh from trimmings probably 3-4 times a day or more. In fact, we had, at one time, we had 3 state meat inspectors buying all their meat from us. So I felt that was a pretty good sign when the state meat inspectors are buying meat from you, rather, and they go into, you know, big stores, small stores, all over this part of Ohio, and they were coming to our store to buy their meat. So I felt pretty good about that.
When you talk about, you know, being able to buy locally for your beef, what about dairy? Because I know at one time there were farmers around here that there were dairy farms. Did the dairy business change when you had the store, or in terms of how you sold it, or was that already, had that already changed in terms of how you sold milks and or milk and cheese?
Well,
and
for quite a few years we were with Borden's, which was, you know, big national brand.
Mm-hmm.
But they still got some of their milk local. Ours come out of Mansfield.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on they closed they distributed out of Mansfield, but they closed the bottling plant down there, and I'm not really sure where it came out of. But then after Borden's closed up, we went to Toft. And most of Toft is local.
Mm-hmm.
Comes from local dairies. And I felt Toft was a real good dairy. Good quality product. And they're still considered a local dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think they go into Toledo. I don't know if they go much past Toledo. And I'm not sure how far south they go anymore. Anything like that. I don't know how big area they cover anymore.
But now plastic dairy, were you selling in plastic or the cartons at the time?
I think we had plastic.
We had plastic. We had cartons. Of course, when I first started in the grocery business, everything was in glass.
Mm-hmm.
People brought their jugs back, and that was the same thing. They brought their jugs back and went back to the dairy, and they sanitized them and refilled them and shipped them back out again, just like Pop. So the reason the dairies and the Pop companies changed, got rid of bottles. They said it was too much labor to haul the bottles back and clean them and refill them and ship them back out. It's cheaper for the companies to do it the way they're doing it now, everything in plastic and cans or aluminum, because it's a lot cheaper. They don't have to worry about any of that stuff, hauling stuff back on their trucks and sanitizing it and refilling it.
Plus, so we didn't have to sort bottles anymore either.
No, that was the only good thing. We didn't have to sort, because people bring in Pop bottles and they'd be all mixed up. So, and you had to sort them according to the companies. You couldn't send 7-Up bottles back to Pepsi. The 7-Up and the RC and the Pepsi and all that had to be separated.
So that was labor intensive.
That was labor intensive for us. So, you know,
and the thing that's funny about that is when we were down at the old store, and that we had that outside inside, we had a wired in cage in that, so if the snow was deep, we had to go out in there to put the bottles outside, because we didn't have room inside. So yeah, it wasn't, we get a lot of bottles.
Yeah, we kept it locked because first we didn't bother worry about locking or anything, but we found out that some of the kids in town were sneaking in, getting empty bottles and bringing them around to the front door and getting money for them again. So we were paying two or three times for the same bottle.
how late were you open? What were your store hours? Were you open 7 days a week?
Yes.
I think 8 to 9 at first.
On Fridays we were open 8 to 9, but then we kept track of how much business we did, and it didn't, from 8 to 9 o'clock on Friday nights, we weren't doing enough business to pay us to stay open. And so we changed our hours. We started staying open 8 to 8. Every day except Sunday. Sunday we were open 8 to 6. Well, at first, when we first opened up, we were open up 8 to 1 on Sunday. But then Sunday got to be one of our better shopping days. And I think that was because so many husbands and wives both work. But Sunday was one of the few days that they weren't working. So Sundays ended up being one of our busier days of the week.
So then that started to go downhill a little bit too, towards the end. Sundays weren't one of our better days anymore. So
that was when, after all the stores started opening up on the north side of Norwalk, when Walmart and Kmart and Drug Mart and Aldi's and Apple's all opened up on the north side of Norwalk. We were so close to those big stores that that's what really killed us.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we first moved into the building where Door Chevy was at, the building that the city tore down. It had basically a flat roof on it, and the roof leaked so bad. We came into work one morning, and we'd had a heavy rain during the night, and the roof leaked so bad that there was flour and cake mix and sugar and everything. And some of the ceiling tile caved in and knocked stuff off the shelf, and everything was soaking wet. And it was a real mess, and we decided we had to do something about the roof. So we got trusses and started putting the trusses up. We were going to shingle it. And we had part of the trusses set, and a big windstorm came up and blew the trusses down. And we had to set them back up. And Bob Bickley came over, and he says, "I think you need some help." And a couple prior years before that, before Jim moved into the pizza box, we let the athletic boosters use our building over to Mellon Festival for bingo. Mm-hmm. And they really did well because it was air conditioned. So if it was hot, people could go in there and play bingo for 3 days in air conditioning. And all the shelving was torn down, so it was just like one big room. So Bob says, "I think you need some help." He said, "I'm going to go talk to the athletic boosters." So Bob talked to athletic boosters, and the next day,
was that a Sunday? Weekend,
it was on a Sunday. We must have had 30 guys out there to help us put the roof back up.
And even the priest from St. Anthony came.
He was up on the roof helping, and I mean, that was really a big help. I don't know what we'd have done if it wouldn't have been for them helping us like that. But that's something that happens in a small town that you aren't going to see happen in a big town.
Yeah.
It was really great. And we sliced a bunch of lunch meat, and everybody ate lunch meat at dinner, and it was really a big help to us that the boosters came down and helped us like that. That was really, and Bob, I have to give Bob a lot of credit because he was behind it. He's really a great guy.
It's a wonderful story to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, where there is a need and to have the community come together for something like that.
Well, I think we have to talk about when we move from the old store to the new store, the JC's
and that. Helped us.
They literally helped us move all our stuff from the old store to the new store, and we took it down in grocery carts. I mean, we were going down the,
like a bunch of ants going back and forth on the street.
Vans maybe or whatever, but that was, I mean, without help like that, you'd never see that in a big town ever. I mean, that's just, it was just different. It was a great day. I mean, you know, it was a part of something new, and yet, you know, it was coming together, and that was great. But there also there were a lot of people in the town that, I'm not going to say a lot because I don't know how many, that didn't like it that we left the old store because that was part, because we weren't on the square no more. Mm-hmm. And they identified the store as being part of the square and not moving. Now we had moved off, and that was the history part. And they liked the old store, and they didn't really like it that we moved.
We had one lady that actually quit shopping with us when we moved from the old store to the new store.
And really?
I asked her, I says, "No," I said, "geez, you know, we have a bigger variety, wider aisles, parking." Mm-hmm. When we were down at the old store, you know, there was the corner cupboard, it's the invention now, was on one side of us, and we had a beauty salon, and then on the other side of us was two bars. And sometimes people would have to drive around several times to find a place to park.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Now we got our own parking lot." And she said, I just liked your smaller store better. And she went to real big stores to shop after she quit shopping with us. But she wouldn't come in shopping anymore after that.
I think another thing too, when we were at the old store, and that when we're talking about groceries and that, we used to haul groceries in grocery carts all over the square to take them to their car. I mean, up and down curbs. And when the snow would fall, and we'd be doing it through the snow. I mean, we'd actually be tugging them this way and then starting to push them because we had to. So that was a big thing for us to move and have a parking lot because we didn't have, we carried them out, but we didn't have to trudge over the curbs and wait for stoplights and stuff like that. And plus, the cars parked close on the square, so sometimes you had to leave the cart on the sidewalk, and then you had to keep carrying them in between cars. Sometimes you had to be careful because the cart was rolling away from you or coming down. So it was a big thing for us to move and have that. That was a plus for us, but I still remember all that because in some days it was really cold when we did that. So,
and I guess probably perhaps people don't look at it that way, but you have to think of those things. Speaking of delivering or taking groceries out to a vehicle, did you ever deliver to homes?
Oh, yes.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I know where I live, when there was a small grocery store, the owner used to deliver sometimes actually to people that were shut in. So how did that work for you?
Or
how
did people call up, and they'd call up, and we'd take their order over the phone, get everything ready, and call them and tell them how much it was, and they'd usually write a check. Either they'd have money for us. Sometimes they'd write us a check, and we'd take the groceries down to them, and they'd pay us for them.
We also delivered to some people that were right on the square that were older people.
Yeah.
Some of them
yeah.
lived above the Wonder Bar.
So did you charge for that, or
no.
was that just a courtesy
no.
of
this was a
part
courtesy.
Of your customers?
No, we didn't charge for,
that.
Geez, I can't remember what the lady's name was that lived down over the hill. It was blind that we used to take groceries to all the time. I can't remember what her name was anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But she lived, you go down 113 and turn off on it on a side street just at the bottom of the hill, and there's some apartments back there. And she was blind, and I can't remember what her name was anymore. But she was probably 80 or something like that, and she'd call up and give us sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
She'd call up, and we'd take the groceries down to her. Either I'd take them down after I closed sometimes, or one of our sons would take them down to her. I don't know if you ever took groceries down to her, and I don't think you did.
Was that something that changed, too? Did you see... Did that kind of remain constant through your ownership of the store? As the years went on, did that kind of drop off where people called for groceries?
I think it dropped off toward the last few years we were there. I think it dropped off if people didn't call up and have us have their groceries ready for them.
Tom and I had a conversation. I think it was probably before we bought the store here, because we felt that maybe we could have got a little bigger, and we decided what we should do about it, and we thought about going on 250. But our big thing in our mind was there were so many people that walked to our store,
mm-hmm.
and especially the elderly, and we felt we would lose that type of concept, and that was important to Mylan. So I think that was part of why we bought that building, and you know, we changed it, but we had that concept in our mind. But we always thought about, because there was, when we first opened up, you can't believe how many people just walked to our store. But I don't think it's like that today.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that's, I think, a big difference.
A lot of, especially when the weather got nice, a lot of people, they come down shopping with their wagon.
Yeah. A lot of the older people did walk. You know, they carried their bags and came to the store, and so that was something different. So,
kids would ride their bicycles to the store, or their mother would pull a wagon. Little kids would be riding a bicycle or a tricycle to the store. That was kind of neat that people did that. But it just, well, from when they started building the stores on the north side of Norwalk, you could see, every time one of the big stores opened up, you could see our customer count drop. And our volume drop from 1992 until we closed in 96. Our customer count dropped almost 1,000 a week.
Wow!
Which the average sale per customer was anywhere from $7 to $10. So you know, that was a big loss in volume, and all of our utilities and everything kept going up. I think our last electric bill for April of 96 was $4,300. And our insurance was so high, and hospitalization was so high. And
we just knew how much more we had to do to get to our break-even point, and we knew that wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make the call. And
that's when we decided to close it. We couldn't see where, no matter how we advertised or what we did, how we were going to get volume, enough volume with all the big stores opened up around us. And then, of course, Walmart opened up in Sandusky, and Meijer opened up in Sandusky, and that's only 7-8 miles away. And we just couldn't see where we were going to get more volume.
We seen where we lost a lot was when Two was doing their big change or whatever.
Right.
And it started the traffic pattern, like when people were coming home from work, and we were losing people there because they were changing their
driving habits.
Yeah, the way they were going home.
Well, when,
You mean when Route 2 opened up?
When they finished Route 2 past 61, they put an exchange in off of Route 2 on Berlin Road towards Berlin Heights. And before, people that worked in Sandusky and lived east of Milan, most of them came down 250 and went out 113. So they'd be coming through Milan after work. When they finished Route 2, they put that exit on Berlin Road. So a lot of those people would come down, get on Route 2 and get off at Berlin Road, so they weren't coming through Milan anymore.
We've seen a big change.
I think it did for a lot of businesses, didn't it? Because for Huron, too, I believe, didn't Enderly's also close
right.
around?
Right, Enderly's closed. They were on the west side of Huron. So, you know, people coming into Huron would have been coming down Route, which would be Route 6 and not Route 2. And I think that changed a lot. Changed for Enderly's, too. They didn't get as much traffic past them.
So
Route 2.
So besides the big grocery stores that came in, rising utility cost overhead, and then it sounds like transportation
or traffic patterns.
One
of the other things that hurt us some was when they did the sewer lines on 601. 601 was actually closed. So the people lived south off of 601 had to go way around to get into Milan. So a lot of them were just started going into Norwalk. And when they opened 601 back up, we didn't gain some of that business back because people had gotten into such a habit of going down Old State Road and into Norwalk to shop. Because that was, you know, one of the few ways they could get around to get to our store. They had to go way around and come back on 250, and people just didn't do it because they had the other stores that they passed while they were doing it. And that hurt our business some, too, when they had 601 closed for the sewer line. Because some of the business we just never got back. In fact, it was a couple of days that they were also doing some work here in town, and our store was completely blocked off. Nobody could get to the parking lot.
Well, we had three ways in, but there was like only one way in, and it was like the back way. So, just a lot of things that
a lot of little things,
little that, things, and it all attributes to one big thing. So,
and you, I know that you supported the community in so many ways. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I know I've heard that you gave to the Edison music department too during our concession stands. Didn't you help out with the school?
We donated a lot, and a lot of stuff we didn't even keep track of. A lot of times kids would come in having a dance or something, they'd need some pop or something, they'd just go up the shelf and take it off the shelf and give it to them. And the athletic boosters bought their hot dogs and that from us, and we sold most of that stuff. We just sold it to them, whatever we paid for it. Sold it to them at cost.
We sponsored baseball teams.
That's
what I was going to ask you. I remember seeing old
Eastman's
t-shirts.
Grocery, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We sponsored baseball teams and donated to the Boosters Club. Like I said, the Boosters Club used our building for, maybe 3-4 years, something like that, for a bingo over the Mellon Festival. They did real well on that. Right. They took in thousands. In the 3 days.
There for a while, and that we left them use our parking lot even when we were over there to make money, but then that kind of came to an end. That's when Don Day had it, and he oversaw it.
He oversaw it. That was the rifle club out at school would park cars on a parking lot over the Mellon Festival. I think the Boy Scouts did it one year too.
Yeah, they might have.
Then our kids decided they wanted to do it themselves, so they parked cars on it for a couple of years. And after we closed, our granddaughters were getting old enough that they parked cars on it several years after we closed the store over at Mellon Festival.
Tell me about some of the people that worked for you at the grocery store. Most of them local Milan residents.
Great bunch of people.
Yeah.
Most of them were with us from day one.
Gladys Drake worked for us. She worked for Bill Kramer for, 15 years, 20 years, something like that. And then when we bought out Bill Kramer, she stayed with us. And she, in fact, she stayed with us until she retired, which was in 90 or 91 or something like that. And Brenda Daly worked with us until we closed. She started working for us in, I think, the late 80s, something like that. And Judy Smith worked for us. And
Ken Velez.
Ken Velez. Ken, yeah. Kenny was, his dad was Mexican, his mother was Caucasian, and he'd had a hard time finding a job. And he had cut meat a little while down at Ruth Packing, which was in a slaughterhouse altogether, different than cutting meat in a grocery store for retail. Mm-hmm. So he really didn't know much about cutting meat, but I hired Kenny, and Gladys and I taught him how to cut meat, mostly Gladys, because I was, the reason I hired him is because I was remodeling the building, the new building to move into, so I wasn't at the store as much, and so Gladys trained him mostly, and he worked for us for several years after we moved into our new building, and then he was offered a job to manage a meat department. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think he still manages the meat department. He manages the meat department for the IGA store in Huron, and he told me when he left, he says, I really feel bad about leaving because, he says, you took me when nobody else would hire me and taught me a trade. Mm-hmm. And he said, I really feel bad about leaving. I said, well, Kenny, I said, I'm not going to hold you back. I says, if you got a chance to better yourself, I says, you take it. It's a good opportunity for you to be able to manage a meat department in a bigger store. I said, I'm sure they'll be able to pay you more money than I can. And I said, I think you should take it. So he did. He took it, and it's worked out real well for him.
We had our overturn in our store was almost nil. Almost all the people, probably in all the years that we were in business, probably we've only had maybe 20 different people that worked for us. We had no overturn at all there.
When Kenny left, that's when my brother was managing the meat department at Sparkle in Norwalk or in Berlin Heights for Billy Warner, and when Kenny quit, we went for 3 or 4 months, I guess, because Gladys had already retired. No, Gladys, I'll take that back. Gladys hadn't retired yet. She's still working for us. And I asked my brother if he wanted to come to work for us. So my brother Don came to work for us and ran the meat department. And then Gladys retired. And Sue Angler came to work for us in the meat department. She worked with my brother, and we also taught our oldest son. He worked for us full-time. We taught him to cut meat, too. And our youngest son is a fireman for Perkins, but he worked for us part-time until we closed. Our granddaughters weren't really old enough to work. Our oldest one was only 8 or 9 or something like that when we closed up. We do have a couple pictures of our two oldest granddaughters. They were probably 5 and 7 or something like that. They were washing the meat trays for the meat department. Mm-hmm. They had aprons on.
They put apples and stuff in the trays, and Tom would ride them up and down the aisles in like toilet tissue boxes, and they'd watch movies in the back room, and that we had movies and that. So
we had a TV back there. Took VCR tapes. In fact, Brenda's granddaughter would
help.
Huh?
This isn't about your help.
No, I know. Brenda's granddaughter would come down and stay sometimes with her grandpa, because her mother worked for us. Brenda's daughter worked for us some too, so she had a little girl, so she didn't have a babysitter, so she'd just go in her back office and watch movies with her granddaughters.
Did you close on holidays?
No, we were open. We closed Christmas and Easter.
And we did some Thanksgivings and that. And then when Tom and I, we had our Thanksgiving at home like the Sunday before, so we didn't do anything on Thanksgiving. So we started to open up just like from 8 till like maybe 1 o'clock and that, just to see what we'd do. And that, it wasn't at the beginning. It was after we were down here, and it had been quite a while. We were surprised. We were busy, and people were so thankful that you were open, because really nobody was open back then because everybody was closing, especially all your big stores. Now they're open more. And they thanked us. They were so happy. There were some people that come in and buy their whole Thanksgiving meal, even the turkey and that, because all of a sudden they were having Thanksgiving. So
Cool Whip was a big seller.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I forgot. I was wondering if it was just some of those little staple items like Butters, Cool Whip.
Yep.
We had a couple people come in Thanksgiving morning and buy everything they needed for the Thanksgiving meal that night, turkey and everything.
They had to go and make their pies yet, and I'm going, oh my gosh.
One thing I did for people at most of the other stores, I know the big stores didn't do, is frozen turkeys. People would, we sold a lot of fresh Albright turkeys. Because, you know, that was Albright, when they were raising turkeys, that was a big turkey in this area. But we also sold a lot of frozen ones. And what I would do for the peoples is 5 or 6 days before Thanksgiving, I would take all the frozen turkeys that I had pre-sold with the people's names on them, and I would take them out of the freezer and put them in our walk-in cooler so they thawed out slow, because that's the best way to thaw a turkey out, is either in cold water or in a refrigerator, under refrigeration.
Okay.
You take a 20-pound turkey, it'll take at least 5 or 6 days to thaw out under refrigeration. And so I thawed all the frozen turkeys out for them, so when they picked them up, they were all thawed out and ready to cook. Which I know the big stores don't do that.
Mm-hmm. So, part of what you can do is a small business, correct?
Right.
Yeah. Customer service.
Right. Yep.
What about anything that else that you could think about that's kind of unique like that? That I don't think people, a lot of younger people today, don't realize that's an important part of customer service.
Sometimes our store was almost like a meeting place for the town. There'd be dozen people standing in the aisles talking to each other. And I remember one day Mrs. Pussitary came in, and
Tootie.
Yeah. And I can't remember what the other lady's name was, but there was another lady that came in shopping, and they had went to school together, and they hadn't seen each other in like 30 or 40 years, and they ran into each other in our aisle, and they were standing there talking. It was really kind of neat, because they hadn't seen each other in years and years and years, and they ran into each other in the aisle in our store. That was kind of neat that they were talking to each other. And I think Tootie said it had been 35 or 40 years since they'd seen each other.
I know there's some people that said we should have a little coffee niche place, because, you know, that was a place that they could get together, because they always met somebody in there, then they ended up talking, and that way they could have sat down for a few minutes and could have had a little talk session or something like that.
In some stores, they do have a place to sit for coffee. Mm-hmm. I think IGA in Norwalk
has
a place.
I had people tell me that, because they always would end up finding somebody they were talking to, and maybe would stand there for a half hour. And I had one person tell me that they really enjoyed coming to the store, because that was a place that they could go and talk and meet somebody. Mm-hmm. So it was,
And we got to know a lot of people. I mean, you know. Of course, we spent more time in Milan than we did at our house. Because I averaged 60 to 80 hours a week for 20 years, and Marlene worked over 50 hours every week. So we were at the store most of the time.
If one of us wasn't there, the other one was. I think that's probably one of the things. I think if you own it, you need to be there and know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, even if you've got people that could do it. And there were times there were some that were left, but not very often, because, I don't know, I just think it's important, because you should be responsible for your business.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you, both of you did not live in ever, you weren't born and raised in Milan. You always lived outside in the Norwalk area?
Yes.
I grew up in Monroeville.
And you grew up in
Norwalk.
Mm-hmm. And we lived on, we built a house years way before we bought the store. We built a house on my wife's family farm, which we still live there after 42 years. In fact, the farm's been in her family since 1829.
Wow. So why Milan? What attracted you to come and move into Milan, or was it just...
The store was available. I was managing a store in Bellevue at the time. I started out for Don Morrow when I grew up in Monroeville when I was 15. Then I worked for Shields for 7 or 8 years. And from there, I went to work in Bellevue and managed an IGA store in Bellevue. And one was cookie representatives from Nabisco came in and one day and he says, Tom, he says, are you interested in buying a store? And I said, yeah, I don't know. I says, where is it at? I says, you know, both of our families live right in this area and we really didn't want to move out of the area. He says, Mr. Kramer is talking about selling his store over in Milan. He says, you ought to go talk to him. He says, I told him maybe he'd be interested in buying his store. See, him and his wife were getting up in their years and they were thinking about retiring. So I went over and talked to him and he says, no, he says, I'm not really interested. So I just kind of left it going and about 2 months later, this salesman asked me, he said, you know, what did he say? And he said, he said, I just talked to him again and now he thinks maybe he'd want to sell. So I talked to him and we started talking back and forth and we agreed on a price and he said he'd help us because we didn't have a lot of money to start out with. So,
and he didn't want all the money at one time either. So
we agreed on how much we'd give him down and we took the rest of the equipment and we paid him for the equipment and because his equipment was all old so it wasn't worth a whole lot. We paid him for the equipment and his stock and we bought the building on land contract.
But we couldn't make any changes in the building without his permission so we couldn't do anything or remodel or do anything because that was part of the deal too because he owned it basically. There's one other thing though. Tom and I had built our home in that and we might have been there 10 years, but our house and everything was on the line if we didn't make it here because we would have lost everything. Mm-hmm. And Tom had opportunities to go other places because there's people that asked him if he wanted, you know, and we did go check a place too. But his dad had arthritis and hadn't worked for a lot of years and that, so we didn't want to leave because if they needed anything. And my parents were in good health, but both of my brothers had moved away, so I was really the only one that was left of my brothers or sisters. I don't have any sisters, but my brothers. So we didn't feel that we wanted to leave our families. So that was an issue for us too. So
that's why Milan worked out good for us because mm-hmm. we only lived about 8 or 9 miles from here. And
some of the other opportunities weren't around.
We had to move.
And
it worked out good. We like I said, we sold Meek's pastry for years in the store. And for almost from the time we opened up mm-hmm. till we closed, we sold their donuts and bread and so forth. And so I stop and pick the stuff up in the morning on my way into work.
And of course, Meek's has been closed for a
number of years now, too. Yeah.
It's funny how one small business is, but then we're all hooked together and it's just like a ripple effect and it's just, they're all gone.
And we bought our produce from Height Produce in Norwalk.
They're gone too.
Unless it was homegrown. We sold a lot of homegrown.
Mm-hmm. We
bought a lot of local produce from
Tom Need, Ed McConaughey,
Delbert Nichols. Delbert used to raise these roasting chickens that were huge. He had some roasting chickens sometimes at Christmas that would weigh 10 and 12 pounds dressed. I mean, they were like a small turkey. And we had people from Norwalk and that come over and get them from us because we were the only one around that had roasting chickens like that. I mean, they were really nice. Delbert lived out on Millman Road, and he's passed away.
His wife's still there.
His wife still lives there.
Marion did a lot of hard work with that. Yeah. She plucked them.
He raised some blueberries and raspberries, and we bought melons from Miller's, and Hawn's raised local raised melons. We bought from them, and gas tires we bought from, and tomatoes we bought homegrown tomatoes and asparagus and corn and Delbert raised cauliflower. We bought homegrown cauliflower from him, broccoli. I tried to buy as much stuff local as I could.
And a lot of family farms that most people who've lived around here are familiar with.
They're gone too.
But again, it kind of illustrates the importance of your business, what it did for, you know, in terms of buying from local farmers. And, you know, it's interesting. It seems like some of this, though, has come back into vogue with the push for buying local markets again. And, you know, I imagine, you know, hearing you talk about the decision to close and what you knew you had to do, what you saw coming. But any regrets? Would you do it all over again?
Yeah, I probably would.
After we closed the store, I really missed the people, because I'd been in the grocery business for 38 years from the time I was 15. And when we closed, I went to work for a construction company, which was a big career change after 38 years in the grocery business. But I worked mostly in their shop, and I had a little shop of my own at the back of the big shop. So I didn't hardly see people all day long, and that was really a big adjustment for me, because I was so used to being around people and talking to people and getting to know people. And we knew so many people in Milan that, you know, they're like friends, you know. We've known them for 20 years, and that was a big adjustment for me to not be around people after we closed. And I went to work for a different line of work. That was a hard adjustment.
What about with you, Marlene? What did you do after the business closed?
The first thing I thought about was, I got to get a job. So, I don't know. It's funny, I had seen an ad in the paper, and it said about a back room that they needed somebody in, Drug Mart. And so I went there and I checked that out, and I went and looked in their back room, and everything's stacked way high. And afterwards I thought, oh my goodness. And I had talked to the manager when I was there and stuff like that. And I thought, I don't know if I really want to do that, because, you know, you're responsible for moving all this heavy stuff and everything. So I went back, and about 3 days later, and they called at the store, and they asked me if I wanted a job, because I was experienced. And so I got a job right away. And in fact, I started working 2 days before we closed the store. I went to work on Friday for them, and I think Saturday was our last day, and that was my first day. So I really started a new job before we even closed our store. So, and that was a good, I mean, you know, yeah, we missed the business. Tom really misses it, and we miss the PA. I love people too. I mean, I think everybody needs people. And we miss it. And I think Milan's a great town. It's just sad what happened, you know, and I think it's just part of the whole economic thing. It's just, I don't know.
When I first went to work for the construction company, I swept floors and ran parts for them and cleaned the bathrooms. You know, that was a big change after being your own boss for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, I managed a store for 5 years, so, you know, that was really a big change for me. But then after about a year, I started working out on the road a little bit and worked in their shop and did things like that. But I noticed when I was working out on the road, I got all over Ohio and into Kentucky, West Virginia quite a bit, and I noticed that, especially in Ohio, a lot of hardly any of your smaller towns had grocery stores anymore. If they set very close to a big town, if they, maybe down in southeastern Ohio where your small towns were 15, 20 miles from a bigger town, they still had small stores. But got into towns like Milan that only set up to maybe 6 or 7 miles from a big town that had big stores, and none of them had grocery stores open anymore.
So it sounds like within a couple of years, or give or take, on when you closed your store, this was starting to happen around that time.
Right. Because Berlin Heights store closed just shortly after not too long after we closed.
Did they close after us or before?
Well, I think they closed after we did.
I hear.
And of course, Enderly's closed in Sandusky Huron. And couple other stores closed in Sandusky, and the small stores were just getting pushed out. And it's not just the grocery stores, it's your hardware stores, and you know, a lot of your small businesses are just getting pushed out.
Mm-hmm. I think when you're
in chains,
I think when you're in business, though, I think you think we'll be okay, you know, we'll survive this, and you know, you'll come up with something better. Or like I used to tell Tom, well, just don't order as much on the truck this week, you know, so that it isn't as much, you know. But it doesn't work out that way, and pretty soon it just hits you. It's, you're one of them, so you have to. It's a hard decision to do. It's either walk away or let it engulf you and literally have nothing. So what do you do?
Because I knew some people had that had small, but were in the same position we were in. They kept trying to hold on and hold on, and they ended up losing their house and everything. Mm-hmm. And we had decided that we'd close before that happened to us.
Yeah. We made a deal between the two of us when we went into business that if we ever felt that we could see this happening or anything, that we would walk away, that we would never, you know. And I didn't think Tom would ever do that because, I mean, that was the love of his life, you know. I mean, we both liked it, but you have to make that decision, and it's a hard decision. So I give him a lot of credit. He walked away, and I think, I mean, he didn't really walk away, but you have to do what you think is best.
I'm wondering about some final thoughts. Do you think people were people surprised? What were the comments of your customers to the end? I mean, were they, when they knew you were closing?
Some people were surprised that we were going to close. There were some people that weren't surprised, because they figured that, you know, sooner or later, being so close, that sooner or later the big stores would...
We tried to keep it to ourselves in that. In fact, the thing that really got, because our employees finally said, because we didn't even tell our employees, we didn't even tell our son. And they were all, like, devastated. But we just, Brenda made a comment to me. She said, I figured there was something up, because she said, because... of the way our ads were, because we couldn't do anything about the ads. We were just locked in nothing. And if you don't get your stuff out and you're running an ad, nobody sees it, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And then she said, and we went, I don't know how many weeks like that. And Brenda said, I had a feeling there was something going on. And then I said, yeah, I said, we just, you know, it was silly to keep paying all this stuff when it wasn't going nowhere. So
It was hard because, well, especially for us, because Marlene and I both had to find jobs. Our oldest son had to find a job. My brother had to find a job. Our other son, of course, he was a full-time fireman, but he worked part-time at the store.
He told everybody that needed to go look for a job and get a job, and don't worry about us. We would see that even if we had to go it ourselves, that we, until the end, we would. That's what we'd do, because they were more important, you know, than to worry about us. So
everybody found jobs.
Yeah.
Brenda, in fact, Brenda still works at Walmart. Mm-hmm. That's where she went to work.
Yeah.
No, she worked someplace else right after it closed, I think, for a while.
I don't know. I don't really know. But you have to do what you have to do, and you have to hope it's the right decision. Mm-hmm. So.
But it's a tough decision to make when you've been in business for 20 years and knew so many people and everything.
It took Tom like a month just to close the store down, because he had to pump all the freezers down.
When we first moved from a small building to the building, we bought some of our equipment new, but some we bought used from other stores that were either remodeling or closing down. But when we closed, there was no small stores to sell our equipment to. We did sell the big freezer we sold, and I sold the walk-in coolers and our grinder and some of that stuff. But there was no small, and your big stores aren't going to buy used equipment. Mm-hmm. And plus, our equipment was too small for your big stores. They want to buy everything brand new because of depreciation and so forth, and because of the size. So when we closed, we didn't have everything. A lot of stuff wasn't sold. I piecemealed all the shelving out and got rid of most of the shelving. I still got a little bit of shelving out in the barn yet. But when the city bought the building, of course, we had to get everything out of it. And it was two meat cases, a dairy case, and a produce case, which is probably worth about $20,000, that I borrowed a truck from the company I worked for. And I hauled them to Lichtenstein's just to get rid of them. We didn't get a penny for them. Mm-hmm. I could almost sit down in their lot and cried, you know.
I mean, they look brand new.
Yeah, because we took good care of them. Every week we took them apart and washed them and everything, and they were really in good shape.
Well, we brought them brand new.
Yeah, they were.
Those were brand new.
And just took them out there and dumped them. That made me feel bad.
Even if somebody could have used them, we'd have gave them to them, but there was nothing.
There
was nobody. Tom says, "Oh, I hate to do that."
We had to get rid of them.
Had to get rid of it.
So. I tried selling them on the internet, but a guy from Canada wanted to buy the produce case, I wanted to sell it to him. I offered it to him cheap, but in order to ship it up there, I had to crate it. Mm-hmm. And it was going to cost me as much to crate it as what he was going to pay me for the case. So I just called him up and told him, I said, I just can't afford to sell it that way. I said, it's going to cost me $200-$300 to crate it. And he was only going to pay me, I think, $300 or $400 for the case to start with. And I said, it's just not worth it to do that. So, and nobody around here, there was any small stores around here to buy this stuff. So we just junked it.
But you want your big stores to do the same thing. They buy a brand new stuff and they close their stuff up. They just junk it. They don't think anything of it. But when you're little like we are and you worked hard and you've tried to make it and then you throw it away. And we're not people to throw it away.
That would have been hard, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah.
But that's, you know, sign of the times. But we're both retired now, so.
Well, you know, this has been an interesting interview. I think that, you know, I've learned so much having done all these interviews. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this?
Miss everybody in Milan.
Yeah, we made a lot of friends. You know,
we still run into people in the stores sometimes when we're shopping or someplace, and
they wish we would come back.
Wish we would come back.
Yep.
Had people tell me they haven't had any good steaks since we closed.
That has to make you feel good to hear those comments from people.
Or bratwurst, because we made homemade bratwurst and homemade sausages. A lot of people like their bratwurst. And I've had people tell me that, too, that they miss our bratwurst. In fact, we made, for years, we made bratwurst for the band, was it the band boosters or music boosters?
Music boosters, I think.
We made bratwurst for the booth. For years that they sold at the Melon Festival.
Well, one or two times after we went out of business and that, Tom made some for some people here in Milan that they asked us if we would, and we did.
I made it, but then after we closed everything down, I didn't have a grinder and didn't have the facilities to do it, so I just quit.
Yeah. It was a good 20 years, you know. And we still try. I just said to him last night, well, we ought to go in business again and do something. And we say, what is it going to be? It's funny. So
maybe sometime down the road, another grocery store.
Well, I think a lot of these small towns do need something, you know, and something in it that people can afford, that they have to make it so expensive that people won't shop. You know, you have to make it, but people's overheads are so high and stuff. It's hard. It's hard. So.
Like Pepsi really made it rough to compete because the big stores were selling Pepsi for less than what I was buying it for. Like a dollar, we were paying $1.50 a case more for Pepsi than what Walmart was selling it for. So even if I sold Pepsi at my cost, I looked like a crook because I was selling it for getting $1.50 more for it. So I called them about it, and they said, well, we'll sell it to you for that price, but you have to buy a semi-load. You know, that's like 6,000 cases, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the money to buy 6,000 cases to start with, or any place to put it.
Plus, if you don't sell it, it outdates. It has a date on it, so, I mean, it's just a lot of pop. So, no.
But that's, bread and milk was, you could pretty well be competitive on that stuff, but... pop and stuff like that, it was pretty tough to be competitive on. I told him, I said, I could go to Walmart and buy it cheaper than you're selling it to me for. So we just had to make the decision.
Yeah. Well, I certainly thank you for this wonderful perspective, you know, looking at the picture of you stand there, Marlene, by the Smucker's jelly, and you know, it's an interesting contrast, you know, when Larry retook your picture over there, that the building's no longer there, but a lot of memories. And, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things I think this interview will provide is some memories for people, and for people to know what it was like to have a small town grocery store. And thank you for the interview.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I didn't even go watch them tear it down. They called me up and told me they were tearing it down. I don't know if I wanted to come and watch. I said, no, I said, I don't want to. I said, I can remember every place I hit my thumb in that building when I was remodeling it. I said, I don't want to come and watch it tore down.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.